Before she could drive, she would climb. She was just 12 years old at the time.
The first highest peak in the lower 48 states, over 13,000 feet.
That's Kimberly Jung. It was her idea to keep climbing all the way to the top of Mount Whitney, even when they hit a storm and her father was ready to turn back.
And I think at that moment I decided, there's no way that I'm turning back and like telling everyone that we didn't do it and telling myself that we didn't do it. We should go. We should keep going.
4 years later, at age 16, Kimberly would tell her parents where she's headed next.
I remember telling them, I'm going to go to West Point. And I was in the back of the car, and they stopped, and they were on the freeway, so they were like, took an exit, and then they talked to me for half an hour, and it was mostly my dad, and he said, are you sure you want to do this? Because I don't think you fully understand what it means to go to the army and to go to war, because you're signing up your life to serve the country.
This is a story about a Chinese woman with a strong sense of mission, beginning at a young age. She follows her gut, going from West Point to Afghanistan, to Harvard Business School, and now, a CEO of Rumi Spice at age 31, Kimberly Jung would create another mission through working with Afghan farmers. This time, she would lead her team all the way into Shark Tank.
Next into the tank are veterans hoping to help farmers in a war-torn country by capitalizing on a rare commodity.
Hi, Sharks. I'm Kim.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Keith.
We're from Chicago, Illinois, and we are Rumi Spice.
Sharks, today we are seeking $250,000 in investment in exchange for 5% of our company.
Her company's mission is about cultivating peace and making profits, one saffron at a time. Would any shark bite? But first, who is Kimberly Jung? What's behind her drive? I'm Mabel Chan, and this is One in a Billion, a podcast about Chinese millennials in America. When Kimberly Jung and I first met a few months ago, she struck me as a warm and friendly woman with a no-nonsense, business-first attitude. So I plunged right in. How would you trace the beginning of your interest in business and entrepreneurship? Is it in your childhood, your early education, your family?
I grew up in Chinatown, Los Angeles. My parents definitely are very entrepreneurial. They're both from Hong Kong, they're immigrants, and they came to Los Angeles to start a new life. I've always watched my parents struggle and to overcome barriers and to succeed.
Kimberly learned to push her own limits by observing her father.
He came over when he was 8, and he was a Chinatown boy, as he self-describes himself. And he really didn't know how to read and write English until when he was about 12 years old, he saw something or he saw someone he wanted to be. And he purposely joined the speech and debate club at his junior high school. And that's when he really accelerated to learn how to speak in public, to learn English much better, and to make something of himself.
Kimberly's mother, meanwhile, had her own obstacles to overcome.
Her name is Mang Lin. Well, she's the firstborn. You know, there's something in her name that, like, encourages the rest of the siblings to come out as male.
A Chinese woman is expected to bring a boy. I remember it well. Back in the 70s, Hong Kong society put a lot of pressure on wives to produce boys. If they didn't, their husbands had this unspoken right to abandon them. Case in point, my grandmother. She had two daughters, my mother and her younger sister. My grandfather left my grandmother for another woman who, after many years, would finally give him a son.
But just imagine what that's like to live, to grow up, to have your name even that way, and to be shadowed.
Shadowed by crushing pressure to deliver boys as her mission in life, Kimberly's mother reached a defining moment.
For some reason, her younger brother, who was 1 year younger than her, did extremely well and was number 2 in all of Hong Kong. Or something like that. And she didn't do as well. And it really, I think, was a huge struggle for her. So what she decided she was going to do was to move to Canada. So she somehow got her father to lend her $5,000. She went to Canada. She went to the University of Toronto by herself. She worked her way through college as an immigrant, as a woman, and then she ended up getting her MBA at the University of Southern California. And so for her, like, she worked as a vacuum salesperson. She worked washing dishes in a chemistry laboratory. And so the same thing, like, she really worked herself up from nothing to become something, and then met my father.
What did you see in your parents that you say, wow, I want to be just like daddy or mommy one day? Is there any such moments?
My father actually ran for state assembly against who would become later on the mayor of Los Angeles. And my father, despite all the odds and being an immigrant, ran on the Republican Party ticket, which is very hard in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is very pro-Democrat, and there's not that many Republicans in California. So right off the bat, my parents were kind of going uphill in their campaign. That was a conscious act to do something that was hard and that really didn't seem natural to him, and where people actually made fun of him for a little bit. But he still did it, and he came out at the other end to later become a politician. And I remember as a little kid looking up to him and thinking, I can do anything because my father is able to do anything.
Kimberly grew up in a poor neighborhood in Chinatown. Her parents drove old cars and never spent money on themselves. But they would invest in Kimberly's future.
I loved the community, although I didn't go to public school in Chinatown. My parents really wanted me to go to private school because they always put number one stock in education. Then I also went to this, like, very, one of the top private schools in the country. You know, I was on scholarship, too.
Which one?
Harvard Westlake. So it was such a contrast between where I went to school and the people who were my classmates and the relatively high level of wealth, I was not accustomed to it, that I would just expose to versus where I lived.
Did you ever feel uncomfortable, and did you ever ask your parents why are they doing that? Was it worthwhile for them?
No, because I think, if anything, that just got me to see that people are very similar across all socioeconomic paths, but at the same time, given different situations, they can behave differently. I think people have the same needs and wants, but when they're given different opportunities, they can behave very differently.
Kimberly remembers her father always going that extra mile because he wanted the best for his children, opportunities he never had.
I mean, my dad used to drive me and my sister to volleyball practice twice a week, about an hour away, and he would bring his Newsweek with him, and he would sit there with his little reading light and a Newsweek, wait till we were done, and drive us an hour all the way back. I mean, just think about that. Like, he's a full-time working chemical engineer who's also managing apartments on the side, and he's also, you know, spending so much time to support his children.
Now I get it. That can-do attitude comes from a safe, loving, and positive place. Her family, her parents led by example. They climbed, they struggled, they succeeded. And they provided the environment for their children to do the same. So when it was Kimberly's turn to climb, she set her eyes on the mountaintop. The 13,000 feet Mount Whitney mountaintop, to be precise. The highest peak in continental United States.
We were unprepared. We were wearing tennis shoes, no gear, like just a little backpack with like water and some trail mix. And by the time we hit the switchbacks, this is past the tree line, there was a storm. So there was the ranger. He was sitting there. He took one look at us, looked us up and down, said, "You guys should probably turn back." And then my dad and I had already hiked for about like 8 hours at this point.
What?
Yeah, and so it was like, he turned to me and I was 12 years old. And he said, "Kimberly, this is up to you. If you want to keep going, we can keep going. If you want to turn back, we'll turn back." And I think at that moment I decided, there's no way that I'm turning back and like telling everyone that we didn't do it and telling myself that we didn't do it. We should go. We should keep going. And it was raining really hard and you know, we were very cold and we couldn't stop because it was so cold. But then we had to stop because, like, by that time the air was so thin there, so there's like no oxygen up there.
Wow. Wait. You have to indulge me in that moment when you said, we got to do this. But what physically or mentally did you equip yourself to give yourself that little boost? I mean, did you drink a lot more water? Did you pray? Did you hug each other?
No, I don't think it's a, I don't think you give yourself a boost. Either you're doing it or you're not doing it, but you make the decision now and you make that decision and you go with it. It's actually kind of like that Nike thing, which is just do it. My father and I did it all the way to the top. And when we reached there, everything had cleared. And it was after the storm, everything was so clear and bright and beautiful. And it was the best view and the best moment I ever had.
That peak experience would prepare Kimberly to keep pushing her limits and finding her edge. Now, we want to hear from you. Send us your comments, pitch us a story. Just go to our new website, oneinabillionvoices.org, and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In our next episode, part two, Kimberly talks about why she chose West Point and Harvard Business School, two iconic male-dominated elite institutions, and what it was like for her as an Asian American and as a woman. Stay tuned for part two next Tuesday. One in a Billion is
Pallavi Katamasu,
Eric Liao,
Brian Latwinowicz,
Sarah Zhu.
It is an independent production of One in a Billion Productions, a nonprofit educational media group in Kendall Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts.